We're at the Four Seasons Hotel in Beverly Hills. We're about to talk to Nicholas Sparks, who's just written A Walk to Remember. Welcome to bookchat.org.
Thanks for having me.
I interviewed you several months ago about your previous novel, Message in a Bottle, and I'd like to just talk for a minute about how that turned into a film and how happy you were with the results.
Well, Message in a Bottle was turned into a film. It was actually purchased prior to the novel's completion, and it was one of the fastest turns around from book to film that I've ever heard about in Hollywood, and that, in fact, most people have heard about. In the end, I was very, very satisfied with the film. I thought they did a wonderful job with it. I had a great working relationship with Denise DeNovi and the Warner Brothers and everyone involved with the production, and I was very pleased with it.
A friend of mine who's a CEO of DC Orbit, a website, I was talking to her this morning, and I said I was going to be interviewing you, and asked her if she had any questions that she'd like asked, and she said, yes, well, in a world of suffering and pain, why can't you make your endings any happier than you do? Well, what do you say about that?
My endings of my novels aren't necessarily sad always. A Walk to Remember and A Notebook are different endings than a Message in a Bottle. Message in a Bottle may have been a tragic ending, and in fact it was a tragic ending, but that was really a story that dates back to the Greek tragedies. A Walk to Remember and The Notebook, they're actually more bittersweet in the end, and there's a lot of lovely moments at the end. It doesn't leave you with the same type of feeling as a straight tragedy. But that's what I write. I write love stories that have their roots in Greek tragedies.
Why don't you tell us how autobiographical A Walk to Remember is?
A Walk to Remember, as far as being autobiographical, it's not really all that autobiographical. Of course, certain elements of all of my novels are drawn from my own life. The main character, Landon Carter, is essentially my voice and how I was in high school. And the story was initially inspired by my sister and some of the things that she's going through. Now, I'm not going to talk about that too much because to do so would be to tell what's going on in the story, and I refuse to do that. But suffice it to say that the female character was drawn from my sister. At the same time, I write novels. I don't write memoirs. I don't write nonfiction. I don't write biographies. These are stories that I get an idea from and then change to make the best possible story that I can.
If you can, could you tell us a little about the process that you go through in transforming real characters or real events into fictional characters and events?
What you do is once you have the germ of an idea and you have an idea of what the theme is you want to explore in a novel, and that's really where I start. I'll start with a theme. For instance, in A Walk to Remember, the theme is the beauty and the power and the innocence of first love. From there, if that's what I want to explore, I'll then begin to draw on characters or people, things that have happened in my own life, and then kind of just start weaving them into a story. It's no more complicated than that, and of course I'm making it sound more simple than it really is in real life. Just because you know what you want to do in a story doesn't make it easy. But how you draw them, a real person into a fictional character, you just change a lot of the elements, you change the settings, change the place, and at the same time, it's almost impossible to grasp a real person in their entirety anyway.
Before we start talking a little about the three main characters in the book, or at least the three main characters as I see them, could you characterize Beaufort, which is the setting of the place? Is it a real place? Is it a totally fictional place? Did you grow up there? What's the story?
It's actually Beaufort. There is a Beaufort, North Carolina, and a Beaufort, South Carolina. And Beaufort is known, people have seen, many films have been shot there, things like Forrest Gump was filmed there, and that's a setting for instance, Pat Conroy-type novels. That's the Lowcountry of South Carolina. Beaufort, North Carolina is on the coast of North Carolina. It's a small town. Blackbeard did make his residence there. You can actually still see Blackbeard's house. And it's just a small coastal town. It's got a wonderfully long history and a fabulous historic district, and it's a town that's, gosh, I think it was founded in the early 1710s, so it's got a lot of things and interesting places to draw on when you're writing a novel.
Again, if I could try to get you to be self-conscious about your technique, you've got a real place, and then you're both going to transform it somewhat, and I mean, in this case, take it back in time 40 years, and at the same time, communicate it with words about a place that's sounds and spaces and colors and so on. How do you set about doing that?
You research, you get pictures from the library, you try and figure out exactly what were the, how large the town was, what it would look like, and what, how people were dressing. And from there, you begin to use your imagination. For instance, if you don't see a lot of cars on the street, you know that the air will not smell of auto exhaust. It'll smell like it smells, for instance, on a very clear day with a strong sea breeze. So you'll put those kinds of smells in there. And you just use your imagination. And one of the things that I try and do is keep things very simple in my novels, in that sometimes less is more. The more you describe something, sometimes the more cluttered it can get in your mind. But if you keep things basic and say, oh, I know something, I've been to a place like that, then people, the readers, will begin to create it in their own minds.
So is part of the reason why things are kept simple is to allow the readers to do some of the work or create their own place to a greater extent?
Absolutely. And at the same time, because it's simply written does not mean that it's simple to write, and there's a really big difference. Most of the time, it's much harder to keep things simple than to make them convoluted. For instance, I could describe what you're wearing over 3 pages or 4 pages and get it, you know, fairly accurate. At the same time, if you're an efficient writer, you can do that in a paragraph and do the same thing. And it's much more difficult to do it in a paragraph, because all of a sudden every single word counts, every single simile or metaphor counts. So writing briefly with an efficiency of words is really what I mean by simply. And that way, when a reader reads it, wow, that's so crisp and clear. At the same time, it's a very difficult thing to attain.
Wrapping up the technique section here, could you tell us whether you have a complete outline of the book before you start, or whether you focus on the characters and see what happens? Do your characters, as some writers say, run away from you at times, or are you in control of them all the time? And do you have to rewrite a lot over and over, or you sort of get it right the first time, or some combination of those?
Everything I know about a novel I could put in one page before it starts. And they're pretty much the major things in the novel: how it begins, how it's going to end, the 4 or 5 major plot points, and what I want to occur in, for instance, the 4 or 5 scenes in the novel. How I get from the beginning of one scene to the end of the scene, however, I'm not always sure. The specific dialogues or the specific events that happen, I sometimes let myself get carried away and follow where my path is leading me. Other times I'm a little more clearer than others. So I don't like to work from an outline, because really the hardest part about writing is thinking and being original and trying to keep things simple. And a lot of times, if you're so clear on the outline, it would probably take me 10 months to think of it and a month to write, and I'd just rather spend 6 or 7 months writing it.
We've talked a lot of theory. Let's talk a little bit about the specifics. I've identified Landon Carter, Jamie Sullivan, and Hegbert Sullivan as the 3 main characters in this book. Could you introduce us briefly to each of them?
Sure. Landon Carter is a typical 17-year-old in 1958. He's a young man whose father's a congressman, and as a result, has lived with his mother primarily because his father's in Washington, and so he's just kind of a typical teenager, not real ambitious, not ambitious. He's not really a great athlete. He's not really great in school. He's not really great at anything, but at the same time, he's not really a bad person, and he's just a typical person who's just trying to lead his life and go on, and completely unprepared for what's about to happen next. Jamie Sullivan is a girl who's the minister's daughter. She's a very good person, and she is, again, modeled after my sister in that she just tries to do the right thing all the time. She and Landon eventually meet, and of course things begin to happen, spin out of control, and Hegbert Sullivan is her father, and her father of course has some issues with Landon's family, and he's got, of course, as a result, some issues with Landon himself.
And of course, he provides a lot of the dramatic tension, I guess you could say.
Yeah, he provides some of the dramatic tension, of course, some of the early dramatic tension. At the same time, he's a good conscious sounding board for the people for both the reader and the characters in the novel. None of these characters are very cliched. It would have been very easy to make these characters very cliched. For instance, he's a Baptist minister, kind of a fire and brimstone type of a Baptist minister. It would be very easy to portray him as a Jerry Falwell or something like that. At the same time, he doesn't come across that way. Hegbert comes across as Hegbert, not someone that you might have seen on television.
If you could be any more specific, how you take a person and prevent them from becoming a type and make them an individual, what kind of little steps do you have to take to do that?
You have to put them in unique situations, and you have to have them say unique things. In other words, not necessarily what the reader would expect them to say.
Do you consider yourself a... Here, no one will be able to see the quotes. Southern writer.
I am a Southern writer in the fact that I live in the South and my novels are set in the South, but my novels are not typically Southern novels. There are four elements to a novel. You've got plot, you've got length, you've got character development, and you've got style. I would write commercial fiction generally, and in commercial fiction, your main emphasis is on plot. Literary fiction, for instance, the main emphasis is on style. In Southern fiction in general, what is regarded as Southern fiction, the main emphasis is on characters. So in that, I'm more commercial writer, but my books are set in the South, and I do live in the South.
So you're somewhere between one-third and one-half a Southern writer, we could say.
I don't know. I, of course, have very interesting characters in my novels, and so I'm not doing one at the expense of the others, but my main focus, of course, is telling the most interesting story that I can.
Okay. Are there role model novels or writers that you depend on or use in your thinking about writing?
I've been a voracious reader my entire life, so I read on average 3 books a week, and I read everything from commercial novels to Southern fiction to literary novels to biographies and historical, just straight history. So I've read so many books. Literally, for the past 20 years, I've read 3 books a week. So I'm somewhere around 2,500. So to pick one or two would be impossible. At the same time, all novels or books that are well written have influenced me in some way, in that I do my best to learn why someone or how someone is doing something well.
How would you characterize the time in which the time and place in which this book is A Walk to Remember is set as compared to, say, something more contemporary?
This novel is set in the late 1950s. In the late 1950s was really the last period of innocence, so to speak, in American society. Television was still not as pervasive as it is today, in that there was television, but there were still only three channels on the television. You didn't have 24-hour news. A place like Beaufort would not have had major newspapers. They would have small newspapers. So it was a very small kind of enclosed world where you really focused on the day-to-day events in your own life. At the same time, I didn't want to set the book in the 60s or the 70s or the 80s or the 90s because this novel is not about the trials and tribulations of being a teenager. This novel is about the beauty and the power and the innocence of first love. And for instance, to set a novel in the 1990s in a high school, you may have to put some things in there that would detract from what the point is of my story. For instance, if I have to say they pass through, metal detectors or something, well, that introduces an element that I would have to describe. But that's not what I want to write about. There are plenty of books out there if people want to read about the travails of modern teenagers, or plenty of television shows that they can follow them as well. This is a love story about first love, and that's what I wanted it to be about.
If we could sort of broaden out from that point to the fact that what it seems to me is one of the major attractions of your writing is that it affirms traditional values. Would you say that's true?
Perhaps. I think that's probably one of the things that people enjoy about my novels. At the same time, it's not the only thing, and I don't know even that that's the major.
What other things would you say are equally or similarly important?
I would say that the probably the major the major things that make my novels popular are the fact that they are very efficiently written, without cliches. They don't delve into super long descriptions of people or places, and at the same time, they tell original stories that are yet universal, in that everyone has a first love, and everyone will remember their own first love, and this story will bring them back to remembering their own first love, even though it's not about them, and their situation may have been entirely different. The final factor is the fact that the characters are very universal. These are people who are not deeply flawed people. I don't write about alcoholics or murderers or rapists. I don't write about all these people, because really I don't know any in my own life. They're not the kind of people I associate with. They were not the kind of people I ever associated with. And to be frank, I don't find them very interesting at all to write about, because there's no challenge in it. To me, it would be very easy to make a serial killer interesting. The very fact that murder is interesting, or, you know, fascinating, just makes it automatically interesting, and then you just put in some real sick and disgusting behavior, and all of a sudden you're credited with creating a unique character with absolutely no work at all. Whereas my books, I try and take someone who you would know as a neighbor, or maybe she's your aunt or somebody. How do you make that person interesting? How do you make Aunt Lucy, whose most exciting facet of her day is collecting the mail and checking on her daisies, try and make her interesting and fascinating to millions of people, and you're in for a lot of work.
So then maybe what the part of the attraction is that by making ordinary people interesting, you're telling millions of ordinary people that they're interesting.
Perhaps that would be a fair thing to say, and at the same time, you always have to go back to the story itself being original as well.
Okay, one last point. You mentioned a few times that there are echoes of Greek tragedy in what you're doing. I'm rereading the Bacchae with a view to maybe rewriting it for the nth time in a modern guise. And so I read an introduction yesterday about that put me in the mood of Greek tragedy. Tell me in what way, without giving away any of the plot, which I think we haven't, about A Walk to Remember, your books draw on Greek tragedy.
Greek tragedies are stories that, again, use very universal characters, where fate brings two characters together, and then fate begins to take the characters apart. And there's always dramatic tension in there. Again, the dramatic tension is something introduced to keep these characters apart, or perhaps drive them apart even further. And in the end, something surprising is going to happen. And that's the essence of a Greek tragedy, as differentiated from something like a romance novel, where, you know, you might have some of those same elements, but it's all got to be tied up in a happy ending.
Well, we'll let people read A Walk to Remember to find out what the deus ex machina is that brings everyone to the conclusion in your book. And in the meantime, I want to thank you for writing it and for talking to us about it on bookchat.org.
Thank you very much.